Water Watch was amongst the organizations pushing Governor Cuomo successfully, you know, to ban fracking. And Governor Cuomo remains a key target for many of our, you know, concerns, including the build-out of frack gas infrastructure. But with the Democrats holding a supermajority in both the Assembly and the Senate, you know, we see a real opening for passing bold climate legislation over the next few weeks, noting, though, that the legislative session does end on June 10th.
Well, I know one of the things that Clean Water Watch has been pushing more recently has been the concept of public power. You know, why do you think public power, you know, democratic control over our energy system is helpful at this point? And what are some of the proposals that you're hoping to see the legislature enact on that?
Absolutely, Mark. Food and Water Watch believes that public power is the perfect vehicle for not only promoting...
This is 90.7 FM WGXC-ACRA, Hudson Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit DedicatedPresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
The Public Service Daily Newscast for May 14th, 2021. I'm Mike Moen. Israel on Thursday said it was massing troops along the Gaza frontier ahead of a possible ground invasion of the Hamas-ruled territory as the two enemies plunged closer to an all-out war. The Associated Press reported that Egyptian mediators rushed to Israel for ceasefire efforts but showed no signs of progress. In a major step toward returning to pre-pandemic life, the CDC on Thursday eased mask-wearing guidance for fully vaccinated people, paving the way for them to stop wearing masks outdoors in crowds and in many indoor settings. As gas stations in Virginia wait for refueling after the Colonial Pipeline shutdown, advocates of electric vehicles say the gas shortage highlights the need to diversify America's energy system. Diane Bernard has more.
The pipeline is the Southeast's primary source of fuel, so this week's cyber attack on it has disrupted daily life for millions. Harry Godfrey with the group Virginia Advanced Energy Economy says some folks couldn't get to work or get kids to school and points to the vulnerability of a fossil fuel transportation system because of its reliance on oil, a single source. Godfrey says an electric system draws power from multiple sources and can bounce back more readily from a breakdown.
From wind and solar generators, from nuclear plants, from hydro, a whole range of resources so that you're not overly reliant upon one individual fuel source. I think that reduces not just the risk of failure, but the risk of, you know, sudden price spikes that we're seeing occur now.
He says the American Jobs Plan aims to fund a transition from oil-dependent cars to electric vehicles, which would help with gas shortages in the future. The Colonial Pipeline resumed operation Wednesday, and officials say it will take several days to restore full service. Reports of price gouging and panic buying throughout the Southeast fed fears during this week's pipeline shutdown. For Public News Service, I'm Diane Bernard.
In Michigan, environmental groups and others rallied on Thursday to oppose Enbridge Energy's decision to keep its controversial Line 5 pipeline open in defiance of Governor Gretchen Whitmer's order to end operations. Monica Myers of the Mackinac Island City Council says any type of fracture to the aging line, which runs in the Straits of Mackinac, poses a serious threat to the area's tourism businesses and natural resources.
Our drinking water source is Lake Huron, and we would be without drinking water during a major spill event. And in that event, we would be forced to evacuate. The overall effect of a Line 5 rupture would devastate our economy, the history, and our way of life on Mackinac Island.
Canada-based Enbridge, industry groups, and labor unions believe a Line 5 shutdown would ruin Michigan's energy supply and damage the economy. This is PNS. The state of Arizona is offering cash incentives to move thousands of unemployed people into jobs, but as Mark Richardson reports, Arizonans who can't find work could lose out.
On Thursday, Governor Doug Ducey announced the state will use federal money to pay unemployment recipients who get a full-time job a $2,000 bonus, or $1,000 for those who snag a part-time job. But for people who wait or can't find suitable employment, jobless benefits will dwindle and become harder to keep. Andrew Segrew with the Arizona Center for Economic Progress believes many who suffered in the pandemic are not responding to the normal economic incentives for work.
Workers aren't accepting business as usual. Disregard for workers' safety and health, exploitation in so many jobs was just laid bare during the pandemic. And I think we're seeing a real reassessment of what workers are willing to accept as the baseline.
Ducey also announced that beginning in September, Arizona will no longer pay the $300 federal unemployment supplement, and anyone still receiving jobless benefits will have to demonstrate they are actively searching for work. Mark Richardson reporting.
Tennessee's attorney general is part of a group that wants Facebook to stop its plans to create a kids' version of Instagram. The group contends using social media can be detrimental to children's health and well-being, and that kids aren't equipped to navigate the challenges. Tennessee Attorney General Herbert Slattery signed the letter, along with more than 40 other state attorneys general. Facebook has said it wouldn't show ads on the Instagram platform for kids under 13, but Chief Deputy Attorney General Jonathan Scrimetti says ads or no ads, the platform will be designed to acclimate kids to social media at a time when they're psychologically vulnerable.
And so they're creating consumers, and they're creating consumers who don't recognize that they're going to essentially be commodified by these companies going forward.
Earlier this year, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg confirmed plans for an Instagram for kids during a congressional hearing on misinformation. A first-in-the-state pilot program could soon offer a different approach to how agencies in Connecticut respond to emergency calls for mental health crises. Michaela Savitt reports.
New London's Director of Human Services, Jeannie Milstein, says this initiative is one result of a citywide public safety policy review committee that targeted mental health as a priority. As many as three peer navigators could be added to the city's crisis response team this fall. Milstein says the added support would improve outcomes of mental health calls, especially for frequent callers.
It would be like a warm handoff between the police and maybe a crisis worker and a navigator. And then the navigator develops a personalized treatment plan that uses the person's existing support system.
She says the city council still has to approve the $200,000 program in its budget, but lawmakers are supportive of the initiative. I'm Michaela Savitt reporting.
This is Mike Moen for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations and online at publicnewsservice.org.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM. Listener-aided and abetted radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to episode 2 of Black Excellence. I'm your host, Professor Shaw. I also have two other guests today. One of them is sitting right next to me, and his name is
Professor Dixon. You know what's up.
So, Professor Dixon, we have another guest, which is on here. Well, he did have another guest, but sadly, his thing messed up a little bit. His name was DJ.
Professor
Popcorn. Yeah. We apologize. So that, you feel me, was your little intro song. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. So that was our song, I'm black and I'm proud. And how did you feel about that? What's your definition of, you know, our little academy of, you feel me, black excellence? Like, what would you say we stand for?
Stand for black excellence. Like, we try to focus on kind of things that schools won't teach you, feel me? Like, we kind of stand for equality. We stand for pride and being black. We stand for just a lot of things, like a lot of personal, like, relations to being black, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, what would you say difference us from school?
First of all, school would never play that video right there.
No, that's true.
Let me see what else. Teachers tend to beat around the bush of the specific topic. Like, let's say you ask your teacher, Let's say you just ask your teacher something around black people. For most, like, schools, they won't really tell you the exact answer. They'll try to give you, like, sometimes they'll try to change the subject. Sometimes they'll try to give you a different, like, look on
not,
it.
Not as so dark.
Different aspect.
Ah, yes.
Thanks.
Professor Popcorn.
Yeah. With playing XXXTentacion. What's up with you, bro?
Not as good as good, though. But, we're happy to have you back.
Hold on. You asked me, what's the difference, right? So that's what school do. Us, we hit every subject that we feel is appropriate, you feel me?
And like important.
Important. Like, for example, we got a Tupac, we got a Q-tip.
We got Q-tip.
It's a video about black excellence. So I think we're gonna play that, and then get back to it, right?
Yeah, most definitely.
I'm black and I'm proud. You know, black excellence to me is just it. To me, it deals with spirit and soul. You know what I'm saying? It deals with, like, you know, being able to exhaust, you know, honestly. You know, sometimes the honesty is a little rough, but it's unapologetic, and it's something that you definitely feel. I think that is the centerpiece to me, to black excellence, because, you know, for the 20th century and surely probably into this century, a lot has been put on the value of man's mind, and, you know, the many achievements or inventions that man has done through study, through, you know, mental investigation, if you would, you know what I'm saying? But there's a lot to be said about spirit, some things that you just can't define, that an equation won't have an answer for, that your intelligence will hit an eventual ceiling, and then you have to rely on your true instinct and your true spin, and on your spirit and on your intuition and your feeling. And I think intuition, spirit, and feeling is something that black people thrive on. That's why we've survived here for so long, because of those things that are a lot of times they're intangible, something you can't really define or put words to, but it's a feeling, it's about faith. I think that those things are, like, the nucleus of black excellence.
No. That was that was Q-tip.
Q-tip. I know somebody I was probably thinking.
Like the Q-tip?
Yeah,
the Q-tip,
that's what I thought when I first
heard
about
it.
That's
what I first thought.
I was like, yeah, that's kind of weird. But it has nothing to do with black excellence, but this is very important. What was your thoughts on the video, bro?
It was great. I liked it. It expressed, like you said, black excellence. The expression that he gave was very heartwarming, especially the way he explained it. I like the way he got across his points and his key detail and stuff along those lines.
Mm-hmm. It was very
compelling.
I forgot what that word means. Good.
Compelling.
Good
thank
vocabulary,
you, thank you,
bro.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, but other than that, I can't really put my mind on it completely. You know what I mean? Because, like, it's a topic that I really like to get into. But it's harder than harder to explain than usual.
Facts, it's true.
The way he said it and the way he talked was so compelling to me. It just like it was so good, like
compelling.
Like it felt so wholesome and
wholesome.
Like, and it spoke to me.
Spoke to.
Yeah.
All right, but so what's up? We about to put this Tupac video.
Yeah,
this,
yeah.
This interview. Important of youth perspective. So yeah, it's a 30-minute video. We're gonna
rest in peace, Tupac.
Rest
now, mind
peace.
You, this is Tupac. You feel me? When he was like, you know, younger.
We're gonna play. We can't play the whole thing because actually we can go an hour, can't we? So yeah, I mean we could play like 10, 20.
Yeah, good decent amount.
Pause here and there.
Yeah, talk about it.
Facts.
Yeah, okay. We're gonna get into it.
It's like 17 is such a weird age. It's such a in the middle age. You're not 18 yet and you're older than 16. So. But I like it. It's nice. It's like a learning stage for me.
Do you wish you could be 18 and get some more rights?
Well, 18 will bring lots of responsibilities that I don't want, but it'll bring respect that I feel like that's the only way I can get it. You know, I try to be as mature as I can be and demand it wherever I can get it. But 18 is like, you're an adult. You like today when I had to sign the release form, I felt so bad because I couldn't sign it myself. I had to go and get my mother's and all that. But 18 is just society's way of saying that you're ready. But 17, like I think I'm ready now, as ready as I'm gonna be in this world. But so it's okay. I guess 17 is all right.
Do you think that you should be given more responsibilities, or do you have much more value than adults place on you because of your age?
Well, the way that my mother brought me up is no lies, no, you know, total truth. Everything is real in society, you know, everything. If something's going on wrong in the house, I know everything. So I was given the responsibility before I wanted it. And so now I can't really differentiate what great responsibility is because I've had it for so long. You know, so she taught me how to be ready for it. And so that's good, and I think it's good because I know that, and it's taught me that when you get out there, the responsibility is staggering, and I'm ready. I'm going to be a little more ready than someone who's grown up in Disney World, you know, with Santa Claus is coming. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think I'm growing up good, as in all sense of the word. I think I'm growing up and learning about responsibilities and everything. Hardest thing about being my age is proving to society that I understand what's going on. Like, not everybody, but frequently, teenagers are stereotyped in being loud music loving, girl chasing, car wanting, not caring about the world. Coke heads, you know, drinking coke and smoking and being drug addicts and I mean
now I'm gonna speak on this because feel me being myself, I'm a teenager, I'm a 16. I get what he means, the concept of it and stuff. Because, like, just going back on it, I'm going to backtrack a little bit on what he just said. What Tupac just said. Mind you, respectfully, this is my first time really hearing Tupac besides, like, some of his music. I'm realizing how proper he speaks. And I like, because I never really heard his voice outside of music. And me being able to hear him like this, it's a new aspect for me. So I'm going to run back what he just said. For y'all, like, just so you can listen.
And so, you know, I think I'm growing up good, as in all sense of the word. I think I'm growing up and learning about responsibilities and everything.
Now, like you said, he felt like he was growing up good and learning responsibilities. Yes, yes, yes. We all learn and gain responsibilities from a young age, some faster than others. Yes, that is true. But as a teenager, you never really know where to fall because, as he said, people think, you know, he's a loudmouth kid. He's not an adult, but he's not a kid. He's a teen. He's getting up there in an age pretty soon, but I mean, like, he's not there. As he said a little bit, society says if you're not 18 and you're younger, and they're going to say you're not mature enough or you're not smart enough, grown enough, anything along those lines. And what he said was at 18, that's like, oh, you're an adult, you're ready, you're matured. But me personally, you can still be mature even if you're not a full grown adult. I have little cousins that aren't even my age, and they're mad mature. They keep up with school. They keep up with their grades, the way they dress. Look, they're presentable. And now, to sometimes knowing that I'm facing that myself, and sooner or later, my little cousins, probably even to this day, right now, my young little cousins will face that, and probably do. Suck. So much. But I will let Tupac say what he wanted to say what he wanted to. That's what I will do right now, because I did want to backtrack on that.
What's the hardest thing about being your age?
The hardest thing about being my age is proving to society that I understand what's going on. Like, we, not everybody, but frequently, teenagers are stereotyped in being loud music loving, girl chasing, car wanting, not caring about the world, coke heads, you know, drinking coke and smoking and being drug addicts. And I mean, in some ways we are. I mean, I chase girls and want the car and loud music, but I like to think of myself as really being socially aware, and not just socially aware as being trendy, you know, being peace, not that. I really think that that teenagers, they got a lot of responsibilities and a lot of burdens because, in fact, we're not, I mean, we're given a horrible world. We're given the gift that we're getting when we got to take over is horrible. They left us, they're leaving this world in bad shape for us to fix up. So I think that we deserve a lot of respect because, you know, in the 60s, they changed a lot in those days.
My man's Tupac really said the 60s. Now, no, we are not in the 60s, but we are in 2000s, 2021, feel me, 2021.
So you ever wonder, right, you know how the 21st century is? You know how it's the 21st?
First century, yeah.
Right? But it's only in the, we're only in the 2000s, not the 2100s. So it's confusing. It can make you confused because, like, in 1999, we was in the 19th century, right? And then we got to the 2000, and we was in the 20th century. So now we're in the 21st century, but that don't even make sense.
Yeah, because there's no 21 in front of it. So it's not 2021.
Bro,
it's not,
no.
2121.
But a century is 100 years, though. So technically, it should be the 20th century still. And
that's
then,
true.
It just makes me mad confused. I don't know how it works.
But, no, that is true.
So, like Tupac said, we do hold a lot of responsibility, especially at the age of teenage. Because mm-hmm. if you think about it, right, you ever heard of the saying, you know, your parents put the building blocks for your future or something along those lines?
Kind of.
So if we hold the future, right, in our hands and stuff, think about it. If our parents was, you know, not doing the greatest, not doing the best influence, right? Mm-hmm. That means we have to, I wouldn't say take responsibility for things that they did, but we would have to make them better. But then parents will say, you're just a kid, or stay in kid's place. Mm-hmm. But still, you gotta remember, especially if you're like among the age of like 17, 16.
You're basically an adult.
You're basically an adult, and a lot of people don't realize that, especially in society. Because they're like, bro, look, you're only 16. You're not 18. You're physically, you're not an adult. You can't do this, that, and the third. But then you think about it more.
They try to make you do a bunch of things, right?
Yes, right.
It's like, hold up. So if I'm a kid, why are you making me do all this extra right, stuff? That's true. Adults?
But then you realize you have certain things, but you're not fully an adult. Society, truthfully, if you think about it, society does not think you're fully matured and you're adult until you're the age of 21. And that's so crazy to me, right? It's crazy how, like, society will really take those things, those core details about yourself, and just, like, not just break them down. Because I guess that's what society does. Makes you hard. And that's a lot of the reason why parents will, you know, give you tough love. Because it's like, your parents is preparing you for the future, yeah. Because they're saying, the world is going to break you. Either the world is going to break you, make you, or destroy you. And I realize why, me personally, I'm black. So I realize black excellence. I realize why black parents, some of them don't really like to show. I guess they're lovey-dovey side, you know what I mean? Because it's like, the world ain't going to show you kindness, fairness, equalness. Because think about it. Even in today's society, the world is still cold and as trash as it's been. We still have shootings. We still have gang violence. Gang violence and violence. Think about it. You hear how people say black on black violence, black on black crimes, right? It's not even like, okay, so when people say black on black violence and black on black crimes, no, it's just crime. Think about it. If a white person was to say it's crime on a white person, right? Mm-hmm. They're not gonna say it's just white on white crime, right? Have you ever heard of, I've never heard of that. I've never heard white on white crime.
I mean, I have on TV shows, like I was watching Ridiculousness, and there's a bunch of categories dedicated to it, but it wasn't really? Like, real.
So, right.
It wasn't actually gonna see a bunch of white people.
Think of it. Like, you go to the street, right? You go outside. Mm-hmm. Two black people fighting. Mm-hmm. What do they call that?
Black on black violence,
right? Now switch it, you see two white people fighting. What do they call it?
A fight.
Right? Think of it. Why do people never say it's a white-on-white fight?
I mean, or people probably do. It's just not.
Have you ever heard it, though?
Not really.
I've never heard that. Think about it. It's just crime. When people do crimes, it's crimes.
Well, hey, but they're looking at it at like the racial standpoint. Yes. Instead of the, you know, I guess just the logical.
It's just crime. Yeah, that point. So, that's another reason why I feel like black excellence is so important. Because it's me to where you're like, okay, not hypnotized, but all the stuff you've been told and information that you want to know. Mm-hmm. It's presented to you in, like, not a pile, but better way of explained. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that's all I can really say about it.
But we got, speaking of, you know, black influencers.
Yeah.
Black everything. I know a lot of people know the great Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rest in peace. The best boxer of all time. You know, feel me. Yeah. Don't got no video, but,
Do we not have a video?
Nope. We don't got nothing on them. But we do have, we do have, multiple of his famous quotes. Fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Mm-hmm. You heard of that one? Let me see. Hold up. My bad. He said, don't count the days. Make the days count.
That's a good one.
He said he hated every minute of training, but he said, don't quit, suffer now, and live the rest of your life as a champion.
That's a good one.
Yeah, service.
I'm going to have to ask you to repeat that one.
What?
That last one you just said. That was a good one.
What I'm saying again?
Yeah.
I hated every minute of training, but I said, don't quit, suffer now, and live the rest of your life as a champion. He said, if you ever dream of beating me, you'd better wake up and apologize.
Man's a little bit cocky.
He said, it's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am. He said, he who is not courageous enough to take risks will accomplish nothing in life. He said, it's not bragging if you can't back it up.
Ooh,
he said, I am the greatest. I said that even before I knew I was.
That's different.
And he said, service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on earth. Okay, let me see. He said, the man who has no imagination has no wings. So that was, you know, a bunch of his stuff. If you look at, well, it's Tupac, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tupac quotes, you feel me? Most of his were, he said, for every dark night, there's a brighter day. Everybody's at war with different things. I'm at war with my own heart sometimes. That's relatable. Let me see. I got one more. Let me see. I don't have no fear of death. My only fear is coming back reincarnated. This is like,
I don't know what to say about that one.
You don't know what that means? You understand it?
I guess, but I don't.
He also said, I'd rather die like a man than live like a coward.
That's a good one. I want to understand that second to last one.
I don't have no fear of death. My only fear is coming back reincarnated.
Yeah, I didn't. I got it at first, but then it got to the reincarnation.
I feel like that quote probably means like, he fears, like, you know, he was great at one point. He feels like he doesn't want to. He fears.
Oh, he doesn't want to lose over, his greatness. Yeah,
he's having to start over a new life, and I guess that's my standpoint.
Makes sense.
Who knows? Maybe he was reincarnated. Who knows?
Could have been. We would never know.
Yeah.
My would say influencer. Mm-hmm. I would say Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. So what I'm gonna do, mind you, this is a little mixture between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. So I hope y'all enjoy this. So yeah.
The white man pays Reverend Martin Luther King, subsidizes Reverend Martin Luther King, so that Reverend Martin Luther King can continue to teach the Negroes to be defenseless. That's what you mean by nonviolent. Be defenseless. Be defenseless in the face of one of the most cruel beasts that has ever taken the people into captivity. That's this American white man. And they have proved it throughout the country by the police dogs and the police clubs. 100 years ago, they used to put on a white sheet and use a bloodhound against Negroes. Today, they have taken off the white sheet and put on police uniforms. They've traded in the bloodhounds for police dogs, and they're still doing the same thing. And just as Uncle Tom, back during slavery, used to keep the Negroes from resisting the bloodhound or resisting the Ku Klux Klan by teaching them to love their enemy or pray for those who use them despitefully, today Martin Luther King is just a 20th century or modern Uncle Tom or a religious Uncle Tom who is doing the same thing today to keep Negroes defenseless in the face of attack that Uncle Tom did on the plantation to keep those Negroes defenseless in the face of the attack of the Klan in that
day. I don't think of love as, in this context, as emotional bosh. I don't think of it as a weak force, but I think of love as something strong and that organizes itself into powerful direct action. Now, this is what I tried to teach in the struggle in the South, that we are not engaged in a struggle that means we sit down and do nothing. That there's a great deal of difference between non-resistance to evil and non-violent resistance. Non-resistance leaves you in a state of stagnant passivity and deadened complacency, wherein non-violent resistance means that you do resist in a very strong and determined manner. And I think some of the criticisms of nonviolence, or some of the critics, fail to realize that we are talking about something very strong, and they confuse non-resistance with nonviolence.
The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to give Negroes a chance to sit in a segregated restaurant beside the same white man who had brutalized them for 400 years. The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to get Negroes to forgive the people who have brutalized them for 400 years by lulling them to sleep and making them forgetting what those whites have done to them. But the masses of black people in America today don't go for what Martin Luther King is putting down. As you said in one of your articles, it's psychologically insecure, something of that sort. I forget how you put it. But you didn't endorse what Martin Luther King was doing yourself.
I do not reject his goals of full integration and full equality rights for American citizens. Do you reject these
goals? If you don't think that he's walking on the right road, I'm quite sure you don't agree that he'll get to the right place. And if you would classify his method as psychologically unrealistic, I think that if a man's method is psychologically unrealistic, which means the road or the means or the method that he's using, I think as a psychologist, you'd be very doubtful that he would reach the right.
It's an ad, bro. It's
woo! Now.
Ric Flair, Nature Boy, what's up?
Now, as the little things I wrote down, the little list I have. So, we already talked about our influencers, right. So, you just heard a little bit of my one influencer, Malcolm X.
Yeah.
So far what we have, the last thing, one of the things I have written down for the first thing I want to talk about is how do they embody black excellence? How would you say... your influence.
Embody, what does that mean? Like influence, black excellence?
Yeah, like what would you say? Like I said earlier, building blocks. Yeah.
For me, Muhammad Ali, he kind of influenced black excellence by, you know, just being great. You feel me? Like he inspired kids, like being an inspiration, I feel like. You know, he always was talking about being great and how to, like, you know, if you ever heard the, expression, you make 0% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah.
Basically, that was his message, feel me? He's trying to encourage kids to try.
Yeah.
And be like great.
Be the best they can.
Yeah.
So with me, I would say, I would probably put Martin Luther King a little bit above Malcolm X. The reason why I say that is because growing up, don't get me wrong, Malcolm X is a great influence. A great influence to black culture. So is Martin Luther King. But when it came to, I would say, different ways of peace, they were two different sides of a coin. And I say this because with Martin Luther King, he wanted the blacks not to be violent. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
But with Malcolm X, it's not that. It was a little different from his perspective.
Yo, he was it. What do you mean?
What I mean by, like, different, just from this video, just alone so far, I've realized, him and Malcolm X had a little disagreement how he said that Malcolm X said that Martin Luther King was basically Uncle Tom, and that he didn't want, well, Malcolm X said that he didn't want the blacks to defend themselves. Well, Malcolm X didn't say that, but
it was kind of what he was being,
That's what he meant to say. That
he said it without saying it.
That's what he meant to say about Martin Luther King, because he said that
Oh, so he
wanted
oh.
he wanted peace. He didn't want them to fight.
So he was saying that Martin Luther King
didn't want them to fight whatsoever. Yeah. Uh-huh. But he didn't understand that the way that Martin Luther King fought racism back then was completely different from the way Malcolm X probably would have did it.
Yeah, facts, facts, facts.
But the reason why I say I would pick Martin Luther King a little bit over Malcolm X is because...
Speeches,
but then you got to realize, at least when I was growing up, I didn't really like conflict whatsoever. I was all about, you feel me, positivity, right? Mm-hmm. I still am. And I could see where he was trying to go with his movement.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
And the only thing I can really say about school, and I don't like bringing up school really often.
It's on the weekend, like, come on, bro. It's the weekend, bro.
My fault. Come on, bro. Like I was saying, the only thing I can really say about school is that they did shed some light on Martin Luther King. I'll give them that little bit of credit.
How do you feel like us, as like the Clubhouse Academy of Black Excellence, how do you feel like we treat each other?
I feel like we treat each other pretty good. It's legit just a family. Like, especially from the ones who's been here for a while.
OGs.
Including myself. You.
I'm not an OG.
Don't put you as an OG?
No. First of all, I kind of am. Like, I came first time. Like,
so you're an OG, but you're not an OG.
I'm a fake OG. Like, I'm like that Fortnite kid that played one game in season one and then called himself an OG.
Mm-mm.
You feel me?
But yeah, a couple of us. So the large majority of us, we some OGs. We came here for a good minute. Some of us, we've come and gone.
Some of us have come and gone, went to better places. I mean, not better places. Nah, that makes it sound like passed away.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they've gone to them better things. Yeah, different places to work, mm-hmm. like that, providing stuff. And then there's some stuck over, like Kyron. Kyron is a true inspiration. Started everything.
So was KJ. Shout out the dog.
Woo! Now, me including Phoebs is also an OG.
Gangster.
He has been here for so long. It's not even funny. Between him and Kyron, this probably wouldn't be happening. He's in Black Excellence. And don't forget about Professor Popcorn.
Professor Popcorn.
Now, sadly, he ain't here right now.
Yes, I don't think he would be joining
us
again.
But most likely,
today.
He is probably listening.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so.
Now, he also OG. Shout out to him.
Shout out, my boys.
How do you feel like we treat like our art, like our... The art we make, like drawing.
Now, before I answer that, how would you answer?
Answer what?
How do you think we would treat our art? Like, how do you think we treat the art?
Equipment?
Yeah, like equipment, art, each other.
Personally, we treat it fairly well. We could, you know, there's always going to be those areas where we could do more for.
Yeah, like, done things
more,
better.
Make it look better. But we're working on that. We're working on it. But it's we do a lot to keep it. Fairly decent looking.
Yeah.
Fairly, you know, make sure the equipment is still usable. Yeah. It's not like mint condition everything that you've just
but it's better than nothing.
Yeah, it's yeah. Work what we got.
Now what would you say that was about equipment, right?
What?
That was about equipment.
Yeah. And then so, we got the treat how we treat the art we make, like our like not just us, but like our fellow workers. Like,
yeah.
How do you feel
fellow peer leaders? Yeah.
Peer leaders, staff members.
Say we treat that very well. Like, even we have art here that we look at every day. Me personally, there's this one art piece that we have. Excuse me.
Explain it, man. I'm trying to figure out.
So there's this one art piece that we have in our in our quarters or living quarters, living area. So every time I see it, I'm just like, we did that. Am I just like, what, over the summer?
Like when we get the artwork stuff?
No, like okay, so you know the living room, right? The little mural, like, says clubhouse.
Yeah. The living room, like, there with the TV?
Yeah. The big TV, yeah.
Next to the kitchen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So every time I look, and I'm just like, dang, we did that. Now, were you? No, I don't think you were.
Let's say it, bro.
Were you with us?
When?
When we first did that mural.
Nope, that was during when COVID was, like, strong, and I was only going to Elliott Park. So,
So this was during the summer and stuff. We were still going good and strong with our artwork. We could do better. Still is.
We got Up Next Project. Feel me? Shout out her. She
she's a very good artist. She don't want to actually who did that mural. Shout out to her. You feel me?
She has very strong creativity. Creative. Yeah, she's very creative, very enthusiastic with her work.
Now, how would you say we treat each other?
We treat each other with respect, feel me? There's gonna be those times where, you know, we goof around, you know, we say, oh, bro, blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we a family, feel me? We get along, we work with each other, we got each other's back, you know, know that. So I feel like we treat each other on a respectful work level. And to be fair, you, DJ, Professor Shaw, and Professor Popcorn. Y'all like basically brothers for me.
We knew each other from that long.
Been chilling since kind of late last year, but feel me, we still been getting close. We're chilling. So I feel like we treat each other with a lot of respect.
Kind of made
a brotherhood.
Yeah, right.
All honesty.
Like this past little couple, like what, month? Probably months.
Yeah, a couple months.
We gonna bring pretty close brotherhood, like he said, great bond. Mm-hmm. And another one of my brothers, DJ Popcorn. I did it myself, Professor DJ Popcorn.
Yeah, Professor Popcorn.
We known each other for that long, and if I would have never met him, I would have never met you.
In fact, I remember first day, you was It was when we were first. We weren't even peer leaders yet.
I was doing music or something.
He was in here, and I came in, and I was like, "Yo, who is this newbie right here?" Because I came in, saw you on the computer. I'm thinking you a random. I'm like, yo, who's this?
I'm like, bro, this man thinking I'm a random. I'm like, bro, I ain't no random. You feel me? I've been here for a minute.
And Professor Popcorn was like, "Yo, that's Professor Shaw. He been here for a minute." Okay. Dang, what I been missing out on? What Kobe do?
Man said I was here for a minute. I'm back now. What happened? Like,
that's crazy.
Time move, time fly.
I was like, change with the quickness on me.
Right? Crazy how time flies.
Exactly. Speaking of time flying.
Time flying right now.
45-minute podcast. You know the vibes. Right. Okay. Let me see. So, let me ask you do you feel like Clubhouse Academy of Black Excellence is going to be successful for longer than a couple weeks, couple months?
Most definitely. I say that because just a little progress we made so far. This is our second show. I'm very confident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got the experience with the radio show.
If it wasn't for like the experience just with the radio show, engineering, talking, being able to like even talk live.
Because radio show, not only radio show, but all kind of speaking things take, they take getting used to. Like, you can't just, unless you're like a natural speaker that just love to talk, like me sometimes, you can't just hop on radio and just start talking.
But like, I never done this before.
It's like, I'm perfect.
Knowing what to do.
Because there's guidelines you got to follow. And plus, me, I have recently did this, the sound engineer process. Like, I went through that kind of training. And that's like, when you first hear a sound engineer and see what they do, you look at the computer and you're like, I'm never touching that ever in my life. And then you look at it and you get it explained to you and you're like, really? Wow, this is kind of easy.
Really? I was the total opposite. So with me, a little backstory. When I first seen this, I was like, dang, low-key kind of look easy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this too easy. Mm-hmm. So then I tried it. I'm like, this is a lot harder than I thought, but it's easy to me. Mm-hmm. But with sound,
hosting,
it was a different experience.
It's
hosting,
it's like different because you got to come up with questions.
I got to talk.
Keep
I got to come. Yep, keep
introduction.
Things going.
Yeah, it's a whole shout out. You got to remember a bunch of stuff. Right. It's not just like you're gonna talk and then just end it. You gotta.
Right, I'm thinking you talk about random stuff. Like, nah, I did it. And I was like, you got to do way more.
Pronounce the right names. Right. Come in at the right times with sound break. I mean,
everything.
Music breaks
and if you don't do that, then the sound engineer can't do his job.
Exactly.
And I
it's
realized
a bad show.
That's
what makes a bad show.
You gotta work together when you do stuff like that. And it's
teamwork makes
moments.
A dream work.
Nah, for real. And moments like this is moments I really like and I cherish. Cause like, equal footing, you feel me? Like, mm-hmm. You won.
Mm-hmm. What we take is dubs, feel me?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really much everything we had to cover, right?
Is it?
What we got? You want to finish? Want to watch some more of the Tupac video?
I guess, yeah, we could.
Hey, it's up to you.
Let Tupac play out?
Professor, yeah, play out till the end. That's what you want to do? Or
yeah,
just,
Tupac different for me.
All right. We're going to end y'all off on a Tupac little interview.
Man, it's about to hit 3.
What's up?
Let y'all little do this thing.
I didn't teach him this. I didn't teach him that. Where did they learn it? Look at unsafe sex and drugs. You could tell if you look at the statistics, they're staggering again, you know. And so I think they're scared because they're realizing that they goofed, they really messed up. And also they fear teenagers are angry. At least this generation seems a little angrier to me and a little bit more rebellious and uninvolved. So they're scared because they're realizing that, you know, what's gonna happen when we get all these people in power? But also just because it's human nature to be scared to watch a child grow up and you don't want to give him that yet.
Well, what do you see as some of the major differences between being a kid or being an adult?
It was funny. Being a kid, like my little cousin, Hiroji, he's 3, and everything to him is happy. The only thing that makes him unhappy is when things are over, when you turn something off and when the television goes off, when it's time to go to bed, or when he has to come in the house. Everything is over. That's bad, you know. And when you're an adult, when something is over, that's like, it's the opposite, you know. When it's over, it's good, you know. You just, oh, I'm off work, it's over, you know, vacation, it's over. Oh, God, she's out of the house. My children in college, it's over. Oh, my God. And so it's that difference. And children see things so great. If the world can, what happens is that adults complicate things and children don't. It's simple as this. The sky is blue. And adults, when they go, the sky is blue. Why is it blue? Because birds and bees and everything wasn't meant to be analyzed. And that's where a lot of problems came in, I think. And that's where I think kids are happier. Kids are definitely happier and more relaxed than adults.
Do you think if parents or adults had happier childhoods, they would be better off when they grow up? I mean, like, a lot of people say if you have a troubled childhood, you lack self-esteem when you grow up.
No, actually, I think it's... Well, okay, from my mother's point... Well, if you grew up happy, too happy, you know, like in fairy tale land, not fairy tale, I mean... If you grew up where, you know, every Christmas you got a present and every birthday you got a present and every holiday was a holiday and everything was peachy, if your parents took care of everything and you just grew up, I don't think that prepares you for the world. You know, my mother had a really bad childhood and my father had a bad childhood and I had a bad childhood, but I love my childhood. Even though it was bad, I love it. I feel like it's taught me so much and I feel like nothing can faze me, you know. Nothing in this world, nothing can surprise me. It might set me back, but only momentarily, only to spring back. And I think it's helped me to learn. It really did help me to learn. And since my mother had a bad childhood, she knows the importance of being honest and the importance of facing each situation as it comes and not dealing in a fairy tale land, being realistic about the problem and analyzing it and solving it. See what you can do to solve it. So if you have a happy childhood, you tend to want your child to have a happy childhood, so you tend to want to keep the bad things out, and I don't think that's good because you don't prepare them for the world.
Suppression, the Republican war on facts, snacks, and democracy. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. The January 6th insurrection was one way to try to overthrow democracy, incite a mob to ransack the Capitol, and threaten to kill key leaders who dared renounce Donald Trump's big lie that Joe Biden stole the 2020 election. People were killed and injured. Public property was damaged. But Congress still counted the Electoral College votes, delayed by only about 12 hours. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland called the insurrection the most dangerous threat to democracy he has witnessed.
And in the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat we face comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocate for the superiority of the white race.
Now a more sophisticated effort to subvert democracy is underway. Across the country, voter suppression bills are being rushed through Republican-controlled state legislatures. These, coupled with partisan gerrymandering that will follow the 2020 U.S. Census results, could erase a century and a half of struggle and progress for voter rights in this country, potentially allowing permanent control of our government by a white supremacist minority. The Brennan Center for Justice has been tracking these bills and, as of April 1st, had counted an astounding 361 of them in 47 states. Georgia and Arizona have already enacted significant voter suppression laws. Both states were Republican strongholds for decades. In 2020, Joe Biden won them both, as did Democratic Senate candidates Mark Kelly in Arizona and John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock in Georgia. Biden's win in those states and the loss of those three Senate seats and thus control of the U.S. Senate was a devastating defeat for the Republican Party. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, reacted on the Fox News channel shortly after the election, saying,
"If Republicans don't challenge and change the U.S. election system, there'll never be another Republican president elected again."
Republicans have heeded Graham's warning, flooding the country with strikingly similar bills designed to restrict and deter voting with the help of the right-wing group ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council.
As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down.
That's the late conservative activist Paul Weyrich in 1980, articulating a long-standing tenet of GOP electoral strategy. This is Mother Jones journalist Ari Berman, the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
The issue is not Democrats versus Republicans. The issue is Republicans versus democracy. They're making it harder for everybody to vote.
The bills target traditionally Democratic voters, primarily in communities of color and urban centers, through a range of tactics, from purging voter rolls and felon disenfranchisement to strict requirements for photo identification, imposing voter registration barriers, making drastic cuts to early absentee and mail-in voting, and reducing or eliminating curbside voting, ballot drop box locations, and the number and capacity of polling places. There's also a concerted effort to bring back the Jim Crow era tactic of aggressive voter intimidation by partisan so-called poll watchers. In Arizona, Republican Governor Doug Ducey just signed a bill that could purge over 100,000 voters from the early mail-in voting list. In Georgia, even more voters were purged prior to the 2018 election, purged by the Republican candidate for governor, Brian Kemp, who was then Secretary of State overseeing the